This episode of Fireside Chat is brought to you by TickTix. Buying tickets shouldn't be anonymous. We are built for fans, by fans. Available on Android and iOS. Are you ready? Sea of Red, it's time for another Fireside Chat, the official podcast of Flames fans. It's go time.
After the All-Star break and an Eastern Canadian swing for the Flames, we're back as always. I'm Dan alongside Matt. And Matt, why don't we start off with some All-Star thoughts? Did you watch the game this year?
I watched the Pacific Division play both games. I didn't watch the other one.
So it was kind of an interesting year for the All-Star game. I feel that the three-on-three thing was refined this year over last year. And as much as I wish we could just play five-on-five All-Star hockey like we used to, of all the gimmicky things they've done, I actually don't mind the 3-on-3.
I agree. It's for an All-Star game, it's supposed to be kind of frivolous. It's not like Major League Baseball where something actually matters. So it is what it is. I don't see there being any drawbacks on having it 3-on-3. The players seem to have fun, and that's the important thing.
Yeah, I would like if there's a little bit more riding on it. You and I have talked about that in the past with, you know, winning a home ice advantage or something in the Stanley Cup. But I like that there's money attached to it now. But I thought it was a fun game. I like the tournament format, too, where you're seeing a few different games be played. But I didn't like the uniforms this year. I thought they were kind of ugly. But, you know, they're LA colors, and LA colors historically been kind of ugly.
Oh, the black and white ones weren't too bad. The yellow and the purple, though, were kind of terrible.
If I remember last year, there was two uniforms. There's just a light and a dark, and they changed based on who was playing. And this year, yeah, there was four of them. Yeah, there's black and white, which wasn't bad. The yellow and gray, I thought, was just too light. The purple and the yellow were bad. I'm really surprised that they didn't go with, like, throwback All-Star jerseys for the 100th year.
Yeah, something like one of those bright orange ones or from the 80s or yeah, whatever.
I think they're trying to go with that with the stars in the bottom, but it just, I don't know, they look too modern to me.
Yeah. Well, really, how many All-Star jerseys through all the years have there been that the jerseys actually look decent?
Yeah, there's been some terrible ones. Do you remember the soccer ones in 2000-2001?
Yeah, I do.
And then, actually, my favorites, they were about that time. Let me go look. They actually looked like Dallas Stars jerseys. They were big, like, stars.
Yeah.
And I actually like those for an All-Star jersey.
Yeah, those were in the early to mid-90s, weren't they?
Yeah, and that was, like, the last year they did West versus East.
Yeah, I think, like, 94, 95, something like that.
Yeah, I see them here on NHL jerseys at the 95-96 All-Star game.
There you go.
And those I liked, because I thought those are, like, star jerseys.
Yeah.
For the All-Stars.
My favorite in recent memory was the one in Minnesota in 2004, where they were kind of, like, a very retro-themed old-time look.
That was right after the, or right before the lockout?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they've tried to do a few of the retro ones in the past, and I don't know, sometimes they do well, sometimes they fail. Do you remember when they did the North America versus, was it, no, maybe it is the one you're thinking of, when they had sort of the off-white,
yeah,
sort of retro?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of those. So, I don't know, All-Star jerseys, I'd be curious to see what the NHL sales of them is, because I can't see them being huge sellers.
No. Well, you got to figure that unless you're a super fan of a particular player where you've got like every jersey that player's ever played in, you're not really going to go out of your way to drop $150 on a All-Star jersey, regardless of whomever it is.
I bet they sell well in the arena, but I can't see anyone buying them, you know, online or at their local arena.
Well, like last year when I went to games after the All-Star break, like I'd see maybe one or two and that's it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like you said, you got to be a fan of the player, not so much the team. The other thing I wanted to get your opinion on is this 100th year patch that the teams are wearing. They all added the patch to their right sleeves. And I don't know, to me, the right sleeve, or at least where they have it, it's really weird looking. It's almost like they just shoved it in there. Usually these kind of patches go right on the front.
Yeah, like when they had the 75th anniversary one, it was like right on the right shoulder and like on the front of the jersey, like opposite where the letters would be. And
yeah,
that looked fine. So I was like, kind of expecting them to do something similar, but they opted for the arms instead for some reason. And
I would say
it just looks out of place.
It does. Like, there's never anything there. And I think even if they would have replaced, and I know they probably can't do it because they're licensing, but put it over the Reebok logo at the back, that wouldn't looked okay. But it looks like it's shoved in there, especially on the Flames jersey. Like, there's so little space in there as it is. It looks like they're cramming it in. And some teams, like the Oilers, it goes right over the stripes.
Yeah, it wasn't well thought out. But
and they're always in different positions. I think, isn't the Leafs above the numbers and the Flames below the numbers?
Yeah, it wasn't very well done. And
no.
I agree. Like, it's just, you should have been able to see those kind of problems coming up, so why not put it somewhere, you know, like on the front of the jersey over the logo on the right side, like the,
yeah,
where the 75th anniversary one was.
Well, that's it. I almost,
you know, there's nothing there on any team, so just stick it there.
Well, that's what I'm looking at. Nobody has patches. There used to always be patches on the front, but nobody's got them, so that seems like the logical place.
Yeah.
Everybody seems to have a shoulder patch now.
I know, and like that's why our, like, having it on the front of the jersey, it's not like where San Jose and Buffalo used to have numbers on the front of their jersey. Like, those are gone, as far as I know. So,
yep,
you can just easily slide that in there. It's uniform. You can see it plain as day on the front of the jersey. And
well, and if you're looking at it for promotion,
it
too.
A feature, yeah.
Oh, no, Buffalo still has their numbers there, but you could find a place for it. Just put it, like, under the number, or they have nothing on their shoulders, put it on their shoulder. They make an exception.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think, like, on the front, it becomes a feature. You'll see it in all the photos they're taking this year. That's not going to happen if it's on the arm.
Yep.
So, I don't know. You can get them put on if anyone wants one. You can get them at Fanatic, but I don't mind the look of the patch. I just think the positioning is terrible, and I asked them if they could put it on the front, and they said they wouldn't, so... Like, well, I don't want one then. So with the All-Star game behind,
I wonder actually next year with all the new jerseys if they're going to keep that there or move it somewhere else.
I have a feeling that they'll probably take the 100th year patch off. I think if they're trying to sell a bunch of new jerseys, they'll want to sell them unpatched. I would imagine that you could probably buy it as an extra. Like, maybe the teams will wear them, but I don't think it'll come standard on the fan versions. And yeah, you're right. Maybe they'll move it somewhere else. It sort of makes you wonder if that's the positioning, if Adidas is almost thinking of getting rid of arm stripes, and that's why they're putting it there, or moving arm numbers. We could have very weird-looking jerseys, man.
I'm kind of wondering with almost a morbid curiosity on what all the jerseys are going to look like.
I thought that
something
of the
tells me, like, not so much.
Well, speaking of All-Star Weekend, I kind of expected them to show off the jerseys at All-Star Weekend.
Yeah, so did I.
I thought that would be the perfect place to show them off. And we haven't seen anything yet. And the only thing we're hearing about them is that Gary Bettman has finally said that advertising won't be on NHL jerseys. He in the past said maybe it would be. And now he's saying he would need an amount of money so astronomical he can't even think of what it would be to put them on there. Mind you, remember, there's the same guy who said the league wasn't looking at expanding either.
I know. You always got to take anything he says with a grain of salt.
So
I think, though, that he does not want advertising on the jerseys themselves, because you also, like, when you're in a situation like that, you have to know your fan base, and when basically all the fans are, like, they make fun of the European leagues who have ads on the jerseys, that it's not like there's any real reception for it at all. So I can see why he's opting to just, you know, at least for now, not have ads.
We had ads on the, I'm just checking here, we had ads on the World Cup jersey.
Well, I'm sure that you'll have ads on, like, every non-NHL event. Like, if you look at photos from that celebrity All-Star game, there was ads all over them.
Yeah, and I'd be okay to have them on, like, All-Star jerseys and World Cup jerseys. but I just don't want them on the 30 teams because that's, yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be hard too. I mean, you look at soccer and they change all the time. And I think with the cost of NHL jerseys, you're not going to have an appetite from fans to buy a new one every 2 years.
Oh, I know. And like change. If you're, like, say a Manchester United fan, like you got like this big advertisement right in the middle, and then like the actual logo, like where the NHL numbers are, and it's just tiny, and that's it. Like, to me, like if I was buying a jersey like that, I wouldn't want it to be corrupted by the advertisement. So
no, and if it was, you'd expect a significant discount. You know, if I'm gonna be wearing like a big McDonald's logo, I'm expecting that jersey's not gonna cost me over $100 anymore because McDonald's is subsidizing it.
Yeah,
and you know that wouldn't
honestly
happen.
Yeah, honestly, I wouldn't buy one, but that's just me.
Well, and that's the whole reason they change them, is the fans will buy new ones. So yeah, I think you're right. It would not have the desired effect. Well, let's get back to the Flames, shall we, Matt?
Sure thing.
Only one Flame at the All-Star Game, but before the All-Star Game, the Flames had a three-game Eastern
Two.
Canadian swing. That's right.
Yeah.
Toronto, yeah, Montreal, Ottawa. We talked after the Toronto game, but that was the first of it. So really, we had the two games for the week. The Flames played Montreal, and we were both worried after our last show that Montreal, at least I was, Montreal might decimate the Flames. And I think that prediction pretty much came true. Radulov notched a pair of goals and Carey Price made 30 saves as the Canadians defeated the Flames 5-1.
Honestly, if the Flames were rolling at full steam and they ran into Carey Price, I still don't think they would have won that game. So, and the fact that they've been playing mediocre hockey lately, you could just kind of pencil in the L before the game started.
Yeah, I think that you might be right about that, but I think that they could have at least done better than 5-1.
Oh, I agree, but the team's struggling, and that's what happens with struggling teams, is they get blown out by good teams.
And, I mean, if you take a look at the stats, the one stat that's held true for me most of the year is not the last little bit, which is when the Flames get less penalty minutes, they win. They had a ton more shots or hits. They had 32 hits to Montreal's 16, 20 shot blocks. But it just, I don't know, the team looked like they have for the last week and a half. They just fell apart. They were out of gas. They didn't seem like they wanted to play.
Listless entirely. And just going through the motions, waiting for the All-Star break.
Yeah, not even finishing checks, not even, you know, fighting as hard as they should against the boards.
No. A very pedestrian effort, and that's being polite.
The only goal of the game was a power play goal from Sam Bennett, with Tkachuk and Hamilton getting the assist. So three guys
with
are actually
1 second left in the game. Like, yeah.
1 second left really didn't matter, but
yeah,
at least we broke the shutout. And the other game, the Flames were in the nation's capital taking on Ottawa. And this was actually, I thought, at least the overtime I saw. I watched most of the game, but with 30.2 seconds left in overtime, Johnny Gaudreau scored to help the Flames end a four-game losing streak with a 3-2 win against the Senators. From what I saw in this one, and, you know, I watched the first and part of the second and the third in overtime. I missed the first part of the second, but I thought this wasn't a bad first period. I thought the Flames came out. It wasn't the best first period we've seen, but compared to last week, I thought that this looked more like Flames hockey.
Yeah, and they didn't give up that last-minute first period goal like the previous two games.
Yeah, you're right. They didn't give that up. It was 2-0 for the Flames. 0-0 for the Flames after the first. They didn't give it up, but they also didn't score.
Yeah.
And when the Flames score first, they usually do well. But, I mean, they weren't playing 100%, but I looked at this and said, okay, this is sort of Calgary Flames hockey. You can see some semblance of this team. And then the Flames scored two in the second period, Michael Ferland and Sean Monahan. Both got a goal in period two. It was Ferland's sixth and Monahan's 16th. So I was glad to see on that Monahan goal, I was glad to see that it was Monahan Goudreau. They were put back together, and I think between the two, that goal and the overtime goal, it was kind of nice to see some chemistry between those guys again. Of all the Flames to me, and I don't know what you thought, Matt, but from what I saw of the game, of all the Flames that were noticeable, I thought Lance Bomo was one of the hardest working. He was physical. He won a lot of races. I thought that he was looking really good for the team all night.
Yeah, well, he also has to realize that his job is on the line. And with Garnet Hathaway being sidelined with injuries, you know that once he's healthy again, he's going to be taking his spot back. So Bulma has to do something to displace either Ferland or somebody else.
And I think Ferland, Bomo, or Freddie Hamilton are the three.
Yeah, so he has to show his worth and light a fire under himself. Otherwise, he's going to get passed by on the depth chart.
For the first time in 10 games, the Flames scored the first goal of the game. So that's not really the stats you want to be seeing. You want to be getting that first goal. And it was nice to see, and I think it really brought the team alive when Ferland scored, but they still looked very pedestrian. I thought that overall in the overtime, I don't know about you, I thought that Ottawa played a better overtime.
Overall. For sure. I was assuming, like, based on what I was seeing, that your predictions from last week were going to come true exactly, where we'd get to overtime and then lose, but they managed to capitalize on that turnover, and Gaudreau and Backlund, you know, that's an interesting pairing during the 3-on-3 overtime. It's not the first time that they've scored. I think that's like the fourth or fifth one that they've scored together. And I think maybe that should be a combo moving forward instead of Gaudreau-Monahan
in overtime. I think if Backlund and Frolik weren't doing so well, you might even see Backlund moved up to a Gaudreau line full-time.
Mm-hmm.
Or Gaudreau put onto the Backlund-Frolik line, but that's really a defensive line, so they wouldn't do that. But, you know, it's nice that we can move those pieces around, though. But that tic-tac-toe in the overtime, it's like this is the Johnny Hockey that we're missing. Where is this every game?
Well, sometimes you just need a bounce to go your way. And, like, how many times lately have we seen him get breakaways or 2-on-0s or 2-on-1s, and something will screw up on either his part or the goalie making a decent save, and where he's normally converting those chances. So sometimes just having one go in, plus having a great all-star game with 4 points, that might be enough to spark him to go on a run over the next few weeks.
I'm hoping so, because we need it.
If the Flames want to make the playoffs, they need him to do that.
So after the Montreal game, before they're showing in Ottawa, and I think part of the reason that they showed so well in Ottawa was they really got tongue-lashed by the coach. If you listen to some of the, and it was very, you know, popular in the news here, but if you listen to what Gullison said, he said it was a pathetic display, no bite back, no kick back. Our top guys didn't do anything. We needed someone to step up. You just have to man up. We play well. One bad thing happens and we crumple. Our starts have been good, but one little shot goes in and we crumple. We have no resolve to stay with it. And hearing that from a guy like Gullison, who's usually pretty even keeled, you know that he's had enough.
Yeah, well, anybody would. You look at how that type of play happened, and like I remember back when during the Iginla years, there was one game where the Flames went up 5-0 on Chicago and lost, and then the next day they played Columbus, and they had a very much a similar game in Columbus as they did in Montreal, where there was no pushback or anything. And, like, I remember then being pissed off by the lack of compete in the players, and it is a distressing and worrying sign when, after getting thumped by the Oilers for the fourth time, then getting thumped by Toronto, and then getting thumped by Montreal, like, you guys have to wake up, you know. Like, it's okay to get blown out every once in a while. Every team, whether you are a Stanley Cup champion or the worst team in the league, it happens. But it's how you react in the games following that that matter. And to have three stinkers in a row, and four really if you count the Nashville game, anybody would be pissed off by that. Like, you're just not getting the results, period. And you need to snap the team out of that kind of habit, otherwise it becomes a habit, and then the team, instead of looking to have potential at maybe becoming a Stanley Cup team, you might end up having a team that's like the Oilers of the last 10 years, where they have talent, but they can't ever find that next gear.
And I mean, if you look at this, this is not the first time. I was looking back through previous schedules. There seems to be one of these just terrible streaks for the team every year. They seem to go on one hot streak and one really cold streak every year for the past couple. And if you want to be a playoff team, you can't be doing that.
No, and especially when losses are more important than wins. Like, a five-game losing streak is far more damaging to a team than a five-game winning streak is in a positive direction. So it's one of those situations where a team can go from being, like, a playoff contender to, like, nearly dead last. And, like, if you looked at the point percentage, the team was in fifth with the fifth worst point per game record heading into the Ottawa game. Like, that's how far they had fallen just because they lost a handful of games in a row. And, like, while they were still in a playoff spot or just outside, you know, once the other teams actually play their games and make up some points because of that, like, the Flames could drop like a stone right to the bottom of the league and basically be in the same spot that they were a year ago. And this team isn't that bad. Like, they shouldn't be a top five pick team this year. But, you know, if the players aren't playing, guess where you're going to be?
So, Matt, let me ask you a question that I've been thinking about for the last little bit. So, in the past, people have, contributed some of the Flames' problems to the management. And I think we've changed management. We have a good management team in now. Would you agree?
The only person I don't like in the organization from, like, the results from their job is the AHL coach, Huska. I'm just not seeing the progression from a bunch of players that you should be seeing.
But, let's just focus on the NHL team for a sec.
Yeah, but, like, other than that, like, I don't really have any complaints about anybody.
No, so. We got a good management team. We switched up the coaches. People gave the coaches a hard time, but we've seen that the
Sigalette
special
might be, but, like, other than that, like, it's few that.
Yeah, I mean, the coaches have changed things. We've seen the power play get better, the penalty kill get better, all the things we said we needed to get better. So I guess what my question to you is then, is the only thing I can see that's been consistent among all these seasons where the players seem to not be turning on is the on-ice leadership, the captain, the alternates. Do you think maybe it's time to look elsewhere besides Giordano to lead this team?
Not yet, but I know what you're saying. And, like, one thing that I think that needs to happen is Johnny Gaudreau needs to focus more on his conditioning, because, like, he was being interviewed at some point in the last little bit, and, like, he had mentioned that, like, he doesn't really eat well still, and, like, if you're not having your star player buy in, like, if you're, say, Lance Boma, why are you going to put in the effort when the so-called offensive leader of the team isn't doing anything to actually commit to being his best?
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but is that also then not an organizational problem where if he's not doing what he should be, the team could fine him or scratch him?
And that might have to happen. And
no, I don't think it's Johnny's a big boy and he should be able to make his own decisions, but if the team is saying this is what we need and he's not doing it, you shouldn't be giving him star treatment.
No, and, you know, sometimes situations like that do end up requiring a player to be traded, and I'm not saying to trade Gaudreau, but whether it's a bad influence player on the team or not, whatever, Like, you're going to eventually need to run into the point of players need to be accountable for their actions. And, like, we see this with Edmonton. They had a bad apple in Taylor Hall, and they traded him. Because he was not learning how to play defense on the ice at all. Was making the same rookie mistakes 5 years into his career. They get rid of him. Magically, the team's defensive problems as forwards go away. Because the rest of the team buys in that, hey, I actually have to do the right thing and play defense. Otherwise, I'm going to be out the door too. And you see this with other players that have left, like Justin Schultz and Gagne with Columbus, that like they've learned to play the right way and they're finding success. And so they got rid of one of the problem players on their team. Magically, the rest of the players fall in line and the team is performing significantly better. And while, yes, McDavid does help, it's not a 30-point turnaround type of difference in the team.
But again, I wonder if some of that, and you know, every team's a different scenario, but I'm thinking, okay, the team captain should be part of who's holding that guy accountable. And I mean, if that's not happening, if we're not seeing Johnny eating right, is this captain the right captain? Is this the guy who's motivating the team? Is this guy, and I don't know enough about Gio behind the scenes to know, is this the guy that's kicking their butt when they have a terrible loss like Montreal? Is this the guy yelling at his teammates in the dressing room? And, you know, that's not acceptable. I don't get that vibe from Gio.
You know, honestly, and this is going to sound absolutely ridiculous, but if I had to pick another player on the team to give the captaincy to, it'd be Matthew Tkachuk. Because he gives a shit every game. His effort level is always 100%. He's always trying to do his best for the team. That's what you need. Like, it's ridiculous because he's 18 and the youngest of everybody on the team. But,
I don't know. I know what you're saying. I think I'd probably go with someone like a Frolik right now.
I know, you'd probably have an interstitial captain veteran for a year or two. Sort of like after, I think it was Lowry stopped being captain, and then it became Conroy, then again, it might end up being something like that. But
it just seems like there's not enough accountability and not enough guys angry about these losses. Like, I was in the dressing room after the Edmonton loss, and they just kind of sounded like, you know what, it was a loss,
it
we
happened.
Need to do better.
Yeah, big deal.
And, you know, oh, well, we need to do better. And it's like, well, talk is cheap, and you guys keep saying that, and you're not. So I don't really think the captain needs to be screaming at his team, but at some point I think the captain needs to be sort of responsible for the on-ice product in a way and say, you know what, guys, we've all let each other down, and this is unacceptable. This is not Flames hockey.
Yeah. Well, like, that's why I said Tkachuk, because he seems to be the only guy who's consistently there doing the right things, at least on the on-ice. So, we'll see. And
I'm not saying, you know, strip Gio this year, but I just think it's time to look at a different
things,
leadership
like,
structure.
Yeah, like, maybe in 2 years from now or something like that. Like, especially if these problems keep happening, then something has to be done.
Yeah.
Right now, you can kind of chalk up part of the problem being that the entire team is not made entirely 100% properly, so their struggles are partially brought up by that. But
yeah, but even then, we need to be seeing individual performances from Johnny Hockey, from Sean Monahan.
Oh, I agree.
TJ Brody. Like, I think the team is as good as it's. I mean, yeah, it has weaknesses, but every team has weaknesses. I think that, you know, even our goalies, we're not getting the performances we need, and somebody has to be kicking their butt for that. And obviously, you know, the coaches are trying, but I think there needs to be accountability within the players, too.
Mm-hmm.
So just a thought I had. I'm not saying go and strip Gio, but I'm just wondering if, you know, and he was kind of the heir apparent when Jerome left. Jerome left, we needed a captain. Gio made sense at the time, but I wonder if it's time to sort of reevaluate that choice.
Yeah. It's sort of like when Brian Campbell was, if I recall correctly, he was the captain in Chicago when they were in the middle, early part of their rebuild, and then eventually it switched over. So I think you might see something along those lines with Giordano being the captain for the early part of the rebuild, and then whichever of the young players it seems most appropriate with, move it on the C onto that person.
See, the thing to remember about being the captain here in Calgary, too, is there's a lot more duties than just hockey. I mean, that's our community face, all that sort of thing, and I'm not sure Tkachuk is ready for that yet. So I think it needs to be a veteran, at least for the next little bit.
Yeah, well, honestly, I don't see Gio getting replaced as captain for until, like, 2019 or something like that. So
yeah, I think it depends who we bring in the offseason, but yeah.
Yeah, again, we'll see. Everything's a little up in the air until then.
Talking about Gio, another question I wanted to pose to you was from Gio's partner last year. I was going to say his tag team partner, but his defensive pair partner last year was TJ Brody. And, I mean, together, last year and even the year before, those guys looked unstoppable. They looked like probably one of the best tandems in the league. This year, the coach has broken them up. We have TJ Brody and Dennis Wideman are often playing together, and Mark Giordano and Dougie Hamilton are often on the ice together. And while I like the Gio-Hamilton pairing, I wonder if maybe the Brody and Gio thing, to get the most out of both those guys, I wonder if they have to be together. I'm almost thinking that together they're better than the sum of their parts. What do you think, Matt?
I have two words. Jay Bouwmeester. Now, the Florida Panthers are my second favorite team, as any dedicated listener knows, and I was extremely pumped that the Flames actually were going out to get Bouwmeester, because he's a very deceptive defenseman, and like how he generated a lot of his offense was by sneaking in behind everybody and being wide open, and his teammates would find him and he'd score. And then he came to Calgary. The coach didn't like that approach. Didn't play him that way, and he had the worst season of his career. And it wasn't until Bob Hartley actually said, hey, this is how you normally play, go out and do it. And then he had a resurgence in his career. Well, TJ Brody, even though he's a left shooting defenseman, plays on the right side. That's what he's comfortable with. That's how he does things. And he's getting shoehorned on the left side where he's visibly not comfortable. And the coaching staff is handcuffing him, both in terms of that and his defensive partner, who is at this point marginally north of an AHL defenseman.
I mean, even England has been playing better than Wideman. So, you know, give Brody England.
So it's one of those situations that, between the off-ice stuff with his girlfriend being diagnosed with MS and getting put in an uncomfortable situation where he's not used to playing on that side and being saddled with a poor defensive partner, it's just a complete recipe to screw TJ Brody up. And
I'm really hoping he hasn't fallen out of favor. Like, you always see some player fall out of favor with the coaching staff, and we haven't really seen that yet, at least visibly with Gullitson.
No.
But I'm wondering if maybe it's Brody.
Well, honestly, like, what I'd like them to do is put TJ Brody back on the right side and leave him there. And he should be able to recover at least a decent portion of his abilities just based off of playing where he is comfortable. And then, you know, eventually in the off season, what I'd like to see is a true left pairing defenseman brought in that's a legitimate number four to put in with him as the 3-4 pairing. But we have to wait till the off season for that. But he's just not getting used the right way. It would almost be like if you put Gaudreau in as a defensive hitting forward on the fourth line. Well, yeah, that's not his game.
Stick him in with Ferland and Hathaway?
Yeah, and like, okay, go hit everybody. Do you see my size? What are you thinking? Well, it's the same. Like, that's just not how Brody operates. And yeah, he's an NHL defenseman, but you know, think of it like if you were, say, like writing, right? And you're right-handed, and now you're being told to write with your left hand, you're not going to be writing anything with any clarity whatsoever. And it's going to take a very long time to make that adjustment.
Well, so, I guess that's my question. Like, you know, he is obviously the better guy on his pairing, no doubt.
Oh yeah.
So I guess I'm trying to figure out why the coaching staff is making him switch sides, not somebody like Weidman, and be like, well, you know what, this guy doesn't really matter anyways.
Well,
I don't want to say it doesn't matter, but it's like his contract's up at the end of the year. We would rather, you know, focus on the guy who's going to be here for a while and put the veteran who should be able to adapt better into that odd spot.
Well, the thing is that you're either going to have to force one of the 5-6 guys up or have England up. And do you want to play a guy like Derek England 20-plus minutes a night?
See, and I
like,
understand.
That's where, like, it's one of those situations.
But do you want to play Dennis Weidman 20 minutes a night?
Well, they are, so.
Based on what we've seen, I'd rather play England than Weidman.
I'd rather play Kulak or Joki Paka than Weidman, but.
And that was the next thing I was going to say, is what if we gave, and it doesn't have to be forever, but just to try it, what if we give Kulak and Brody a shot?
I know, and. Like,
I mean, we're playing terrible hockey as it is. We're probably going to lose a bunch more. Let's just, you know, we can't do any worse than we're doing.
Especially if the Flames are out of it by, say, mid-February, like around when they play the Flyers. If that's the case, then perhaps, like, guys like Weidman might actually get traded off the team, in which case then you've got to try different things in order to see what you have with all the pieces that are remaining.
I understood the coach wanting to switch those guys at the beginning of the year, just like he did Johnny Money, and see what you've got and see what you can salvage, or not what you can salvage, but I guess what you can get if you put them with different partners. But to me, at some point, you have to sort of abort the experiment. And if you look at it, I think I would rather, at least for me, I would rather have Gio and Brody together as my number one pairing and then find another partner for Hamilton instead of spreading out Brody and Gio. I just think they play so much better when they're together. I don't want to ruin that chemistry.
Well, honestly, though, I think Hamilton is the best defenseman on the team. So you want him being the number one defenseman. It's like, if the Flames could find a suitable partner for Hamilton being a legitimate first pairing defenseman, then you have Gio and Brody as your second pairing, and hey, that's awesome. You know what I mean? But. So, like, I can understand them wanting Gio with Hamilton. It's just trying to figure out how to get all of the pieces to work on the Rubik's Cube, and the coaching staff hasn't quite solved it yet.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, as much as you and I both agree that Carl Alsner would be a great guy here, I think he would be a better partner for Hamilton than he would for Brody.
Yeah, oh, I agree, and that's exactly how I'd play it, and with Alsner and Hamilton being like the de facto first, like both the first and second pairing are going to be playing between 22 and 25 minutes a night anyway, so it doesn't really make that much of a difference what you label them as, but yeah. I could see that next year if that's how it shook out.
Yeah, so I guess to me, I'm just looking at it saying, you know what, we've tried this experiment, and the coach seems adamant on the Weidman-Brody pair. Like, to me, it's time to start experimenting. Let's try Kulak there. Let's try Joki Paka there. Heck, let's even try maybe Hamilton and Brody. Like, I think it's just...
Maybe at some point later on, maybe you bring up Shillington or Anderson, and hey, have a few games, see how it goes.
Well, see, I could see putting a guy like that or Kulak with Gio as a second pair.
Yeah.
You know, like, let the veteran kind of walk them through it. And...
Yeah, like, especially like if the Flames are out of it, then why not throw everybody out there? Like, even guys like Jankowski and Shinkarik and Klimchuk and that.
But I'm saying Mangiapane, even before we're
like,
out
everybody,
of it.
Everybody, no, you know what I mean? Like, just experiment
away
with everybody.
Well, and we've seen that in the past. Like, usually the Flames make massive roster changes after the deadline. Remember the one year they brought up so many guys that they had to find replacements in the AHL?
Oh, I know.
But I'm just saying, without even bringing guys up, just shuffling the deck chairs that we have already, you know, just saying, okay, this obviously we have isn't working. So don't even call a guy up at this point. Just move the pieces we have around. And maybe you'll strike lightning that we didn't already know about.
Yep.
Like, to me, at this point, with where the Flames are, they're in the second wild card spot, but they're barely hanging on. Give it a shot and see. I think, I don't know about you, I've kind of, Yeah, they might make it, but I'm kind of, at this point, I think I've resigned myself that they're probably not going to make the playoffs.
That's basically where I'm at.
I don't want to say I've written the season off yet.
Points
but...
percentage, they're in the bottom 10.
Exactly.
So, unless they go on a long winning streak like the one in December, they're not going to get back as many points.
But even then, if you look historically, for every win streak this team goes on, then they go on a losing streak.
I know.
So I'm not saying I'm writing the season off, but just in my gut right now on, you know, the end of January.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, if you're a betting person, you wouldn't be betting on Calgary.
No. So just some interesting ideas there for the defense and something I wanted to get your thoughts on. Moving to the forwards, we're going to spend some time on the forwards tonight. Before we talk about our UFA forwards, wanted to throw some ideas by you for the forward lines. Again, with kind of the way the Flames have been playing, I spent some of the weekend thinking about forward lines and what could we do to move some of these guys around. You know that I like the Gaudreau-Monahan pairing. I know what you've said, and I agree with you in a way about moving that talent to two different lines, but I think you need to establish a top first line first. And we've seen the Gaudreau still getting slashed. We've seen he's still getting picked on. I don't know what you do to fix that besides put some toughness on his line. And I'm looking down the roster thinking, why don't we try Tkachuk there on the right wing? What if we were to go with a Gaudreau-Monahan-Tkachuk line for line one, and then Backlund and Frolik, we add Bennett to that line on the left wing, take him off center, and try to reignite his game a little bit.
Couldn't hurt. And with Boma having the flexibility of being a center as well as a winger, you could make the third line, say, Versteeg, Stajan, and Brouwer, and then the fourth line, Ferland, Boma, and either Hamilton or Hathaway. And you'd still have, decent lines 1 through 4.
Yeah. I guess I'm just thinking that, you know, Tkachuk is the guy that's going to do the dirty work. He'll get in the corners. He'll fight for the puck.
And honestly, if you were to put Tkachuk with Gaudreau and Monahan, I'd actually shift Gaudreau over to the right wing just because he's smart enough to be versatile when it, he plays on the right wing anyway on the power play most of the time. So,
yeah, I think you could try it both ways.
Yeah.
You know, even every shift switch them up, just see what works. But yeah, I think that I'm just looking at kind of our lineup and thinking there has to be some changes made. And I think that we need some toughness on that first line, especially with Gaudreau still getting picked on. And this would let Gaudreau and Monahan do what they do best, which is move the puck towards the net. And if Tkachuk can do all that dirty work, he's still a great puck mover and he can still score and pass on his own. But I think that would be a great pairing there. And Bennett, as we've talked about, is struggling a bit, and I think he might be able to get something going with Backlund and Frolik. If nothing else, he could work on some of his two-way game.
Yep. I can't argue with anything that you said. So.
And, you know, the third, fourth line at that point, like you said, I mean, there's two or three ways it could go. You just kind of intermix those guys until you find the ones you like.
Yep.
So just some thoughts I thought I'd throw out there, see what people think. If you guys agree or disagree, let us know on Twitter or Facebook. You know, it'd be interesting to see, and I think we might hopefully see some more movement of the lines both up front and on the back end once the Flames resign themselves to not making the playoffs. While we're talking about forwards, Matt, we mentioned last week that we did part one of a series looking at roster moves, and today we're going to look at part two, which is the forwards. Next week will be our goaltenders in net, looking at who's going to be back, who might not be back, who do we have in the system to replace them, that sort of thing. So last week we talked about the defense. We talked about the possibility that we might have three defensemen not coming back and what's available on the unrestricted free agent market. The Flames are doing pretty good up front. For the first time in a while, they don't have a lot of free agent forwards. They've got Chris Versteeg, who's an unrestricted free agent. And then they have Ferland, Chiasson, Bennett, and Hathaway, who are all RFAs. I don't think there's any question that the Flames will probably qualify all of those RFAs. What do you think?
I don't think they qualify Chiasson, but they try to just basically sign him because I know you have to give him a raise of X dollars to qualify him. I can't remember. I think it's 10%.
I was going to say, I think it's 10%.
And they may just opt to not do that and just say sign him for $750 or $1 million or whatever.
Yeah, he's making $800,000 now. I don't think he's worth $1 million. I think we could find another piece in the farm for that.
Say. whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If it works where you have to qualify him and then just get him to sign the qualifying offer, that's fine.
See, to me, I think I would move on from Chiasson, but I think he's Gullitson's guy, and I can see him coming back because of that.
Yeah.
And I think that
I think the Flames would be better off just letting him go, but
I think that position is replaceable through our AHL depth.
Yeah. Like, if you're intending on keeping him as the 13th forward, then sure, why not? He's big, I guess.
Yeah, but then you'd have to find a place for Hamilton.
Yeah.
Ferland, I think, will stick around. He may not be a Flame. I think he could get taken by Vegas. I don't think it's likely, but I think he could be taken. But I think that they'll re-sign him.
And realistically, if you're looking at anybody that the Flames would expose, like, there's not really a lot of talent there. Like,
no.
Matt Stajan is probably the best option, or just signing Derek England might even be better in terms of value.
I don't think the Flames would do it, but I think that they should do it, but I don't think they will. Let's put it that way. And that's expose Troy Brouwer.
That wouldn't be a bad thing, necessarily.
I don't think they will, because I think
no.
The GM might think, you know, that I'm giving up on my new contract.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, if we lose Ferland, I think we're still doing pretty well.
Yeah, and, by the way, speaking of Brouwer, everybody didn't really like Frolik signing last year. And he did have a down year last year, and a lot of people thought he was overpaid. And then this year, Frolik's awesome. So, you know.
Took some adjustment.
Yeah, like Brouwer.
And I'm not saying Brouwer's terrible, but he's making just a little more than Frolik.
Like, yeah, I'm just talking it like in generalities, because I've heard a lot of harping on him. Well, yeah, Frolik got the same treatment last year, and he's doing a lot better now that he's adjusted to playing in Calgary, so Brouwer could very well be an instrumental part of the team next year. So,
see, the difference to me is I liked Frolik when we signed him. I thought we were overpaying him, but I liked the player.
Yeah.
I like what he brings, and I think he has a unique piece. I don't really get what Troy Brouwer brings besides a right wing position. Like, I just don't think he's unique enough for them to find that niche for him. But we'll see. I hope it's not a bad contract.
Huh.
You know, he's a veteran. If nothing else, it's always good to have vets around, but he's an expensive veteran at $4.5 million. But I think I think they should expose him because it doesn't hurt. I don't think he'll get taken, but I think it would not hurt to expose him. Bennett will obviously be back, and that's going to be an interesting deal to see what happens as an RFA, where he gets on the spectrum. I mean, I think he'll get about $3.5 million, just looking at where other contracts are at.
Yeah, I'm thinking like in the 2.5 to 3 range for 2 years. Yeah, you know, your prototypical bridge contract.
And Hathaway, I think no question, gets either re-signed or qualified.
Yeah.
So really, if you look at that, then that leaves Versteeg's spot with question, and that's really – and maybe Chiasson's spot. So potentially 2 spots. We talked about this the week that you weren't here, and Mike and I talked about, is Versteeg worth bringing back? And I said, to me, I think part of the charm of Versteeg is he's cheap. He's made of glass. We've seen several times this year that he's just not not up for the challenge, if you will. He's always getting hurt and he's injured. So I wouldn't want to see this guy making $2 million or $3 million because I don't think he'll live up to it. Right now he's making $950,000. I think he's a bargain at that price. Matt, would you bring Versteeg back? And if so, what would you pay him?
Not at all. And I wouldn't even offer him a contract, personally.
I think that if we were lacking veterans, it might be easier too.
Yeah, it's just...
But with a guy like Brouwer...
Yeah, like when you've got Weidman's money coming off the books, it's not like the Flames are going to be cash-strapped like they were this year. You've got at least $5.5 million to play with. And why not dump that money towards a proper top six right winger? And the Flames need desperately somebody who can actually play on the right side in a top six role. So go out and spend the money to get a proper player for that. Not a cheap guy that's doing very well. Like, I'm not slamming Versteeg, and he will get a contract somewhere. It's just, it doesn't make any sense for it to be here.
I would bring Versteeg back in if we could get him for less than $1 million. If we get
That's not going to happen.
I don't know. I don't think he's shown enough where he's going to get snapped up right away. I wouldn't be surprised to see him, like a training camp walk on again.
Yeah, I think a one or two year deal at like $2 million per for a team that's lacking, basically in the situation that Calgary was, I think could make sense.
I don't even know if he's going to get that much. $2 million is sort of the new, I want to say $2 million is a new million, but it used to be that everyone just kind of got $1 million contracts. And now everyone seems to be getting the, you know, 2 to 2.5. And I just don't see Versteeg getting that. I don't think after what he's shown and the injuries he's had that he's even going to get $1.7 million.
Yeah.
I think he'll end up going to either a team like the Coyotes who need some veterans, or end up somewhere like Vegas who's trying to assemble some veterans for the first time. And that's the only place I could see him getting big money. Otherwise, I think he'll get less than let's say 1.25. I wouldn't rule him out, but I would kind of look at him as your 13th forward. He's a good veteran guy. You can step in when you need him to, but he's not a guy I want in the lineup for 60, 70, 80 games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it depends. Like say the Flames finish in the bottom five, right? And they get Owen Tippett. Well, likely Owen Tippett would be actually in the Flames lineup next year, just because of his size and the fact that he's a shooting right winger, it would make sense. Now, that would obviously take one of the right wing spots that would be vacated by Chiasson and Versteeg. Barring that, if the Flames don't get that kind of a player in, then I think that you could potentially bring Versteeg back to be like your third line right winger or left winger, depending. That's a cheaper guy, but honestly, I don't see that being like choice number one for him or the Flames, to be perfectly honest.
I think they have so much forward depth now, you'd have to look at that third line spot as, is there a guy that we could promote that would be of equal sort of caliber?
Yeah, and like honestly, at this rate, I think like if you put Hunter Shinkarik in there full time, I don't see much of a difference.
No, I mean, if we look at the guys listed as left wing, we've got Emile Poirier, who I don't think the Flames are ready to bring up full-time yet. Hunter Shinkarik, I think, would be a good guy. I thought he'd make the team out of camp this year. Morgan Klimchuk, I think, not quite ready yet. Brett Pollock, not ready. Maybe Mangiapane, but I don't think he's necessarily there quite yet.
No, if he was bigger, then I think you could just slot him in right now. It's just that with his size, I think you're going to want to see him in the A for another year or two, just for getting used to playing with men instead.
I agree.
Like, he's doing good, but you don't want to rush. You know, unless you're a guy like Gaudreau where the talent is overwhelming, smaller players, it's just better to ease them in a bit.
Yeah, I think that if we're looking at that as a bottom six position, which I am, I don't think that on a team that's a playoff team, Versteeg isn't your top six anymore. I think you're better to bring somebody up from the bottom, from the AHL for that, because we've got to start moving those guys through there. And I think that Shinkarik is at that point where he's almost like where Granlund was when we traded him. He's, as you called, used the term last year, a sort of quadruple A guy. He's too good for the AHL, but not quite for the NHL full-time, and I think Shinkarik's at that level right now.
Yeah, and you have to actually give players like that the opportunity to put up or shut up at some point. And like, honestly, with Berchi and Granlund, the Flames had too much depth where they weren't going to get that kind of an opportunity, so it made sense to cash those assets in. But, you know, we can't just keep trading guys that are decent for other prospects that are decent and, you know, keep cycling that on. Like, you have to eventually promote guys and see what they have.
Yeah, and I think Shinkarik for bottom six guys, it would be just fine.
Yeah, and I think he's got a physical edge to his game, so I don't see him looking out a place on either the third or fourth line.
Just looking at the Flames' history, and especially if True Living is still GM this summer, I see them go out and trying to free agent shop for one right winger.
Yeah, same here.
They've done that the last 2 years. They brought in Frolik. They brought in Brouwer. I think you'll see them shop for a big-name right winger.
TJ Oshie.
TJ Oshie would be my preference, and I think he'd do well here, but I wonder if he's going to be the most highly sought-after guy, and we might have to overpay significantly.
Yeah. Possible.
If it wasn't Oshie, who would you like to see them go out and get as a right winger?
Honestly, at that rate, I'd probably trade for somebody just because the UFA depth isn't spectacular, and I think that you'd be better off dealing, like, sort of like the Hamilton trade. Like, find some right winger that's decent, that's kind of falling out with his team, and, like, even if it costs our first rounder at this draft or the next one, so be it.
So looking at some of the free agents that are available, David Pastrnak is, I believe, RFA.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't go for him. Radulov's an RFA. Nito Niederreiter is an R. Oh, no. Sorry. Radulov's a UFA. So I could see the Flames going after him, but I'm not sure he'd fit well here. TJ Oshie is a UFA. That would be my first choice. Jaromir Jagr, I don't want to touch. Just too old. I don't know. You're right. There's not a ton of guys. Like, they're all older guys. You got Burrows. You got Doan. Jerome McGinley. Drew Stafford, maybe, but I wouldn't look at him as a top, you know, top line winger. I think Drew Stafford would be a middle six guy. But other than that, I mean, Tommy Wingles might be the best guy on this list.
Yeah.
So it's not
like,
a great...
Yeah, that's where... Like, it might not even be a bad idea to try Gaudreau as a right winger anyway, just to see if he's comfortable doing that, just to kind of solve that problem because of the fact that you can easily find a left winger organizationally, even. Just, like, shift Tkachuk up, put Bennett on left wing, and you've got your top six left wingers, you know,
yeah,
easily solved. So...
TJ Oshie right now is making $4.5 million with the
Capitals. Six and a half would probably be where, like, a 5 or 6 year deal at 6.5.
I was going to say, I don't think you pay him more than you do Gaudreau, Monahan. I think
no.
He kind of falls in the same area there.
Yeah. And, like, honestly, a 5 year, say, $33 million contract, yeah, it's expensive, but at the end of the day, it's not really going to kill you. So.
And you got to spend the money to make the money, right? You've got
yeah.
to go.
Oh, yeah. Well,
bring
especially like
players.
When you're wasting like $8 million on two defensemen that are like 6'7" guys. Like, it's.
Well, I mean,
like,
just
if you're investing that money in actual players that are worth that much, then. You know what I mean? Like, it's.
Well, I mean, if we put it into, you know, relative terms, so let's just say 6'5" for the sake of argument. So really, if we get rid of Weidman, who's making 5.25, we would be paying Oshie then about $1.25 million more.
Yeah,
like
which is
you know,
no
to
big
me,
deal.
It's not like we don't have the money. We've got it tied up now in the wrong spots. We got Smead coming off the books. There's another $3 million. So between those two contracts, you can bring Oshie in.
Yeah,
and you're
and
not going to miss anything on the blue line.
Or Brouwer and Oshie, and have that whole trade on your team.
There you go. Perfect. The one guy I didn't mention earlier, because I think we're in agreement here, Brandon Bolig's a UFA. He's done.
Oh, yeah. Europe are retired.
No reason to bring him back.
Yeah.
And all the other Ford UFA or RFAs they're going to sign. Lyndon Vay, I think they'll re-sign. He's a good AHL hand.
It's one of those things that, like, if you lose him, who cares, really? Like, you can always find next year's version of that guy, if need be.
So it sounds like our consensus then is that we'll probably end up losing Versteeg and maybe Chiasson, and we would replace them with Shinkarik and hopefully Oshie.
Yeah, or some other guy via trade.
I just don't know what assets we want to give up.
Yeah, well, there's always
somebody.
That are
going to get you a top-line guy.
Well, at that rate, you're not necessarily looking for a top-line guy either. Like, you're basically, like, if you find somebody that's the equivalent of what Hudler was when we brought him in. Like, the guy that I'm thinking of that would be perfect in that position would be Gustav Nyquist. Just a decent second line right winger and can play either on the first line or the third line. Just that versatility, can play with anybody, basically.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that. I think that's
And like
still
with
go
the
for...
Red Wings are, you know, going to be in rebuild mode. They're not necessarily going to be wanting to keep a hold of a guy that's 27 years old and, you know, like at the his prime when they're in rebuild mode. I think they'd rather have the assets in return. And like 2 years ago, Nyquist scored 27 goals. The year before that, 28. And last year, he had a bit of a down year. This year, he's half point per game. So, you know, it's one of those situations where I don't think the acquisition cost would be astronomical. Like, it might even be as little as a second round pick and a decent prospect. So, we'll see.
Yeah, I think that I would still go with... I think that Gustav would be a good option. I think he'd be my number two.
Yeah. Oh, and I would. I'd rather Oshie's sign. One. Yeah. I'd rather sign Oshie because you're not having to waste the asset acquisition cost.
Well, even then, I just think he's a better player. Like.
Oh, I agree.
You know, he'd be my first choice.
Yep.
So. Forwards, not a lot's going to change there, and I think in a lot of ways that's good that we're going to see massive movement on the blue line. I think almost half our defense are gone. You don't want too much of a turnover, and last year we saw a lot of forwards turnover, so now it's the defense's turn, and for the most part I like this forward core. If we're getting out of them when we should be, I think we've got a good core there that just needs a couple tweaks.
Yeah, by and large, like even on the defense, we only need one guy, basically, and I think the rest we can fill internally.
Are there any forwards right now that you think who are wearing a Flaming C now that won't be, say, come training camp next year?
Lance Boma and Matt Stajan. I think Stajan gets claimed in the expansion draft, and I think the Flames deal Lance Boma. Because every team is wanting players like Boma, and while at 2.2 is a little much for a fourth line guy like that, it's not overly so, and it's only the 1 year.
Yeah, I think you'd have a lot of suitors for Bomas. I think you could even move him this year almost as a, you know, rental mm-hmm. plus 1 year because he's fairly cheap. But
yeah, honestly, I wouldn't expect much from him, like maybe a fifth round pick or something like that.
Well, I was thinking about this over the All-Star weekend. What would you think if the Flames traded him to Vegas? I could see them wanting a guy like that, another, you know, younger veteran guy.
Yeah.
Get a pick back from him.
I wouldn't be opposed to that.
I could just see them looking for a guy like that, you know, in a trade, or even offering Boma to them to not take somebody that we might leave unprotected.
Yes. Lance Here, Boma, have future Boma concern. So that way you don't take Furland, say.
Yeah, you know, it's a Lance Boma for future considerations is what it would show in the record books. And we always see that happen with the expansion draft. Interesting news, speaking of the expansion draft, I don't know your thoughts on this quickly, is a lot of people have been talking about how the Flames might be able to trade for Fleury for cheap if they were interested in Marc-Andre Fleury. It's come out of Pittsburgh that if Fleury is still on the roster come time for the expansion draft, they're planning to just buy him out. And at that point, if you were the Flames GM, would you make a run at a free agent Marc-Andre Fleury?
Give us your first round pick and tag Fleury along with it. Mm-hmm.
Why don't they even do anything? I think they just buy him out.
Well, it depends on what management, like the ownership, wants. Like, yeah. If they would rather give the pick up than the cash, then hey, give us a first or a second or something. You know?
Yeah. The nice thing about a free agent Fleury, I mean, he's on a pretty reasonable deal right now. I think he's making 4.5. I'd have to go check, but you know, he would probably take. Usually, you see these guys take half that when they sign after they've got bought out because they got a ton of money. And I think you could bring in a guy like that as a veteran goalie for maybe $3 million.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't think that like the Flames should, like, unless they are getting some incentive, I wouldn't bother with acquiring Fleury.
I think it's better in a trade where, like you said, yeah, you're getting some incentive. You're getting a first or a second.
Yeah, he's making 5.75 for the next 2 years after this one. So, yeah, I'd want a first plus a good prospect at that rate.
So what if you were to trade, say, Boma and, you know, something for Fleury in a second?
Yeah, I'd rather just not do that. So
it's interesting to look at. I mean, that was one of the guys they talked about last summer. We'll talk about goalies next week, but I think that Ben Bishop may be another option for the Flames. I personally don't want to pay what I think it'll be worth, but we'll talk about that next week.
Oh, here's another bit of news from today. The Barclays Center is kicking the New York Islanders out of their building after the season.
Where are they going to play?
Have fun with that.
Doesn't Edmonton have an empty arena?
Well, it might end up being that they have to do some slapdash renovations in the Coliseum and bring it back, or move somewhere for a season or something.
Do you think Vegas can get their money back on the expansion fee and just buy that team?
Who knows?
I can't.
Maybe Carolina will relocate to Quebec, and then the Islanders will just play in Carolina for a year.
Well, I think if you're gonna, that would be weird. I think if you're gonna do that, you just end up moving the Islanders to Quebec.
Yeah,
but yeah, I don't know. I think that we're seeing the NHL in an interesting time now with a few teams that are on the rocks. Carolina, I think, honestly, as sad as it is, because they're a storied franchise, I think this might be the beginning to the end of the Islanders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Hurricanes, they're not really that storied of a franchise. They were when they were in Hartford, but I think this might be the beginning of the end of the Islanders. And it's not like the New York area is not going to be served by hockey. They've got the Rangers. They've got the Flyers. They've got, you know, New Jersey. So there's lots of teams in that area.
Mm-hmm.
I think that just, I mean, the Islanders, I think, have been the worst of them for a while. And maybe the market's just souring
pretty much
them.
Since the early to mid-90s.
They've and been that's terrible. A terrible arena they're in, too.
Oh, I know.
Like, it's got posts in the way, and there's a car next to the ice nobody can see through, and it takes up seating room, and it's I want to know who thought this is the best arena they've got.
Yeah.
The other thing I was looking at, because I was looking at where you could put them, the old Meadowlands Arena in New Jersey is not being used but has not been knocked down yet, so maybe they could find the keys for that thing. But it really doesn't make sense if the Islanders aren't playing on the island, does it?
Who knows?
What are they doing with the old Alcatraz building?
I don't know.
There's an island. People have to paddle their way out to the rink.
Yeah, the San Francisco Islanders, I guess.
There you go. I don't know, the San Francisco Inmates. I always thought the Islanders was a dumb name in and of itself. But.
Oh.
Interesting times. We'll see what happens with some of these teams. But I honestly think by 2020, you see a different landscape in the NHL. I think that the Vegas thing is the start, not necessarily of expansion, but I think it's the start of sort of some movement, just like we saw in the 90s when we saw the, you know, Quebec move to Colorado, Hartford move to Hartford to Carolina, and Quebec to Phoenix. I think that we're about to see a little sort of realignment like that again. And that's going to happen every once in a while as the political and economic climates change. So we'll see, but that's my prediction. I think we'll see two, maybe three teams relocate in the next 3 to 5 years here. We were talking about some players that the Flames need to bring in or maybe need to get rid of. Not a lot of people know, but the Flames signed a new defenseman today. And he is the shortest player on the team. Johnny Gaudreau no longer holds that record. The new Flames defenseman who they signed, his name is Fionn Daly. And he's from Kilkenny, Ireland. Born on August 19th, 2007, which makes him 9 years old. He's 4'5" and weighs 86 pounds. Shoots right. This was a deal the Flames announced on today when we're recording, which is January 30th. And this was a make-a-wish kid. And he came in. He got to become part of the team. He signed a contract for a day. He practiced with the Flames, sat on their meetings. These things always warm my heart to see these kids in, you know, the Make-A-Wish program and other such programs with the Flames Foundation and whatnot, getting to experience their dreams. They had a press conference where Brad Treliving introduced him and signed his contract. It was really awesome to see. And he's a sledge hockey player. But I love seeing these kind of things for the team. And it really shows that this hockey team is more than just a hockey team in the city. It's bringing dreams to people. It brings hope to people. It's just, it's a community staple. And that's what we were talking about earlier when we talked about the captain and their role in this organization. And, you know, you need that ability to go out there and work the community. And that's the thing that's going to be hard for Vegas starting up, is getting that community focus going, getting things set up the way they want them, and figuring out, you know, what the community needs from them. But if anyone's interested, you can go to the Flames website, calgaryflames.com or flames.nhl.com, and you'll see a whole article about Fionn Dailey and his day with the Flames. It's pretty cool to see. He got his own dressing room stall. He got his own jersey. They did a signing of his contract, and he got to go out on the ice and practice with the guys. So really great story here. And I wanted to blame somebody cutting onions today when I read it, because I saw a tear in my eye, but I can't blame anybody. It's a great story. And the last one I remember like this was a couple of years ago when there was a young kids hockey game, and I guess Harvey the Hound was supposed to show up and didn't, and the kids were disappointed, and they brought them all the dome and gave them a dome experience, and Beasley did the announcing, and it was really heartwarming. So good for the Flames organization. I love to see these things in our city. So Matt, the last topic I wanted to talk about this week, I don't know if you all have anything else, but the last one I wanted to bring up was the controversial 100 greatest NHL players list that was announced during the All-Star weekend. Most of these players are from 1967 to present, but there's some before that. And this was, the NHL didn't rank them 1 to 100. They just kind of said, here's the grouping of the top 100 players. They didn't rank them. They didn't put them in any sort of order. They didn't want to play favorites. Looking at this list, there's some interesting choices here. If we look at former Flames, we have Grant Fuhr, Brett Hull, Al MacInnis, Joe Nieuwendyk. What are your thoughts overall of this list, Matt?
By and large, I didn't have too many complaints over it. I know a lot of Flames fans are pissed off that Iginla wasn't put on, and I thought it was personally bad that Evgeny Malkin wasn't put on. But other than that, I don't have too many complaints.
There's some interesting choices. Like Tim Horton, I thought was an interesting choice.
Like, he was a good defenseman, but he's pretty much only known for the coffee, and that's about it.
And I think that there's some guys in here, even a guy like Brad Park, I thought sort of an interesting nomination. I think there's some guys that are on here because of the name value, a guy like Tim Horton. I also think they were trying to get a certain number from most of the teams. So, yeah, some of these definitely almost seem like it's either the guy's done business with the league or he's famous, they put him in there. You and I talked before the show, and I would be really interested to see how they rank these. I mean, what is their sort of criteria for the top 100? And if it's just kind of the best players in their position by points or stats, that's one thing. But I think sometimes there's the intangibles. I think sometimes we see these players who, like an Iginla, like a Lanny McDonald, who aren't the best player in the league, but they mean so much to their team. You know, Lanny was really the heart and soul of this team. He really helped with that Stanley Cup run. He became the face of the Calgary market, and I think he really helped sell the Calgary Flames, both in Calgary and otherwise. And I guess it just depends what you're rating them by.
Yeah, and like if you look at Iginla, undoubtedly from like 2000, 2001 to 03, 04, he was the best player in the league. But after the first lockout, he changed his game, and he became more of a finesse player like Alex Tanguy, and like he just wasn't the same guy, and he lost a bunch of weight and just changed how he played entirely, and he became more of a secondary player who could just score goals, sort of like what Brett Hull was when he was with Detroit and that. And you can't build a team around a player like that, and that's part of the reason why the Flames seemingly always underperformed their team on paper from the post-lockout era right through until the rebuild. So, like, I can understand the justification of not having him in that top 100. Now, if you extend that list down to 110, I'm sure he's on it, but I can understand why they left him off. Malkin, though, you got me. I have no idea why he would, like, honestly, he and Crosby and Ovechkin have been the three best players since they came in the league. So I don't see how they overlooked that, but.
And I think there's guys like a Brendan Shanahan who I might take off and put Malkin in.
Well, speaking of Shanahan, I think Shanahan was, like, if Ginla had continued playing like he was from 0-1-0-2 to 0-3-0-4 through the rest of his career, I think that's, they would have been interchangeable, those two names. But it's just when Ginla lost that and became that more of a finesse guy, that's where Shanahan got the edge. Like, in terms of raw talent, I'd give it to Ginla.
I also think Shanahan looked better because he was on some really, really good Red Wings teams.
Yeah, and Shanahan was a very good player for a long time, and he never really changed his game, unlike Ginla, and I think that was that separation between the two.
Could be. So, I mean, for me, I would take Shanahan. I think Shanahan's a great player, but to me, Shanahan's always a supporting guy.
Well, honestly, you took Tim Horton off and threw Malkin in, like, I would take Shanahan before Tim Horton, so.
That's true.
Know.
I don't know, maybe they got a coffee sponsorship for it or something. And you know, I mean, there's guys like Brian Trottier, who's on there again. Not sure I'd put him in the best 100. Luke Robitaille, yeah, he's the highest scoring left winger in history, but again, not sure I'd put him in the top 100. So kind of interesting picks. But overall, I think a pretty well-done list, and TSN has their best 67 since 67 as well. Mike Gartner's another one, or Mike Gartner, who I'm not sure I'd have in here, but you know, it's got to be hard to pick 100 from such a wide range of players that have come through the league.
Yeah, and, like, I'm sure all the ones that missed the cut would basically be in the next 10 or 15 names on the list. So,
well, 10 years from now, we'll see. When they're wearing the 110th patch on their glove instead, or on their sock. Wherever they choose
vertically
to put it next
on
time.
The back of their skates.
Well, I think it's got to be on something more visible than that. Maybe it goes like on the knee of the socks.
Okay.
Or on the pants or something like that. Because you want people to see it and you want people to want to buy one. Well, anything else you want to chat about, Matt?
Let's head to the predictions.
So neither of us did very well last week. We weren't really sure. Neither of us were all that happy with our predictions going into the All-Star break, but there was two games on the docket, Montreal and Ottawa. I came the closest. I thought we get 1 point in an OT loss to Ottawa. We made it to OT, but we won the game. I guess shouldn't be complaining about that. And you thought the Flames would lose both of them and get 0 points. So neither of us got a point last week. So it still sits 5-1 in my favor. It's like the Montreal game. This week, the Flames have still a pretty light schedule. They play on February 1st against Minnesota, the 3rd against New Jersey, and then the 5th is a matinee game here at the Dome against the New York Rangers, and that's a 12 p.m. start time. Three games, one of which is at home. The Minnesota game's at home, the New Jersey and the Rangers games are both on the road, so they're going on a bit of a swing there. What do you think, Matt? Three games, prediction?
Yeah, I'm going to be Debbie Downer and say 0 points.
0 points again?
Because you got to figure that both the Wild and the Rangers are two of the top five or six teams in the NHL. So likely we're going to have troubles with them. And New Jersey, they have a good pair of goaltenders with Kincaid and Schneider, and we typically don't do well against good goaltending. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Donut.
I'm hoping that the team got some rest over the All-Star break and they're ready to go. I think they'll struggle against Minnesota, but I'm going to give them 2 points against New Jersey. Yeah.
Well, realistically, if the Flames have playoff aspirations, they need 4 out of the 6.
Yeah. And then, I mean, we won't look that far ahead, but the next week we have one game, which is the Pittsburgh Penguins on the 7th, and then they have their week break there. I think that's their bye week from the Wednesday to the Sunday. So they'll get some more rest there. So I almost feel like you've got to push through the tiredness, get these four done, and then take your rest. But overall, not a bad month. I mean, if we look at February, we play almost, besides that 1 week, we're playing almost every other day. We have a one back-to-back. So the team should, I hope, look a little more vibrant because they don't have as much excuse to say that they're tired. And not a terrible schedule either. I mean, if we look at the teams, we got Pittsburgh, then we have Arizona, Philadelphia, Vancouver, Nashville, Tampa Bay, Florida, Carolina, and L.A. So not a bad schedule. Not a great schedule, but not a bad schedule.
It's pretty much evenly split between bad and good teams. So if they can...
And then March.
If they can get through it...
March
then,
will be a tough month.
And be in a playoff spot, then maybe they have a chance in March, but...
And March is going to be tough. We are literally playing for almost 2.5 weeks every other day. Like the 13th, the 15th, the 17th, the 19th, the 21st, the 23rd, the 25th, the 27th, 29th, 31st. Yeah.
And then
so
in
it's going to be a
and
tough.
Then the second, 4th, 6th, and 8th. So in April. Yeah. So yeah, it's going to be a bit of a gong show for the Flames. It's every other day, so pretty much all like the end of the season, all of it.
So, I mean, if we're seeing them run out of gas now, this could really be where we see this team fall apart.
But who knows? When the Flames have had adversity, they've rallied. Like when Giordano went down 2 years ago, and even when Gaudreau went down earlier this season. So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll definitely see what happens. I'm not really sure if we're going to... If we're going to see a lot happen this month as far as trading goes, but I really think that, you know, we're a month away. March 1st is the trade deadline, and I really think that we are in for some interesting things to happen. I think that the Flames, if they're going to make a deal, I think they should jump on it and try to beat the deadline because the team that beats the deadline usually gets the best deal.
Well, I think like,
and we saw that last year too.
If the Flames say lose 5 or 6 out of the next 8 games, so like they're out of it well in advance, then I think you'll start see them dealing off people early and often.
Yeah, I don't know about often. I don't know how much we really have to sell.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Like, anything that's not stapled down can move on. Like, I think guys like Versteeg and Weidman, Englund might. So, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll definitely see what happens. And hopefully the Flames have a good week, because I think that they really need to set the pace after their terrible end of January. I think that they need to come back in February and really show a different side of them. And if they don't, they're dead in the water. That's my thought. But yeah, let's see what happens. Anyway, Matt, we will talk to you after those 3 games, just before the Pittsburgh game, and hopefully we are singing a different tune than we did in January.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll catch you next time.
This has been another Fireside Chat. Don't forget to subscribe to the show at firesidechat.ca. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/firesidechat, and to follow us on Twitter at Fireside Podcast. Catch our show on the podcast channel at thehockeywriters.com. Fireside Chat is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike license. Hosted by Dan Stevenson and Matt Dubourg. Produced and edited by Peter Marino and Ryan Coetz.